Welcome everybody for this week's podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Mike Jeremy, an analyst who's also spent time in industry and indeed has travelled the world in broadening his knowledge. And he is hopefully going to share some of that knowledge with us today on the subject of electric vehicles. In previous podcasts, post-COVID, we've talked about the environmental benefits and changes that we've seen, as well as the considerable challenges to industry and particularly transport. So what about electric vehicles, Mike? Is this a great opportunity for them to expand their footprint?
Thanks, Andy. Well, let's see. Try and structure this by going through it in a series of broader to more specific ideas. So let's start with the reason why the automotive industry is sort of racing to go electric. And I think it's well known, it's been discussed, pollution from the internal combustion engine getting out of hand. If you want to see the impact of that, just look at the clear skies we're seeing in reports above Delhi, where traffic has ceased compared to the kind of toxic gloom that enshrouded that place up until recently. What kind of changes then are we seeing? I think the most startling is in some of the market cap and share prices of the major makers. Tesla's market cap is now about $150 billion, and that's more than three times the combined market cap of Ford, about $19 billion, and General Motors, about $31 billion. And that really emphasizes the pace at which people are looking forward to this change, the adoption of electric vehicles. If you'd like some facts and projections, the IEA, the International Energy Authority, projected that by the end of 2018, there'd be about 3.5 million electric vehicles, rising by 2030 to 220 million, which the majority would be battery electric, 130 million. And of course, there are these hybrids, which are really popular because you can carry on driving a petrol, but you've got the electric alternative for a certain range, for a certain distance. So some of the facts anyway behind the global picture. I'd like to focus on the UK, because here we can see the pressures to change, to adopt EVs, electric vehicles, the initial impact, and some of the major issues, which is what I'm heading towards in this discussion. How many vehicles are on the road in the UK? Andy, any idea?
How many households, how many people? 20 million.
Yeah, it's a bit more than that. There are 39 million vehicles of all types registered in the UK. Many households, some have two vehicles. Of course, there are commercial vehicles included. Recently, for reasons we all know, the sale of new vehicles has plummeted by about 75%, but we're still getting new registrations. There's a great resource online for stats on electric vehicles and reviews for anyone who wants to buy any type of EV, which is called Next Green Car, and that's where I've been getting a lot of my information from. So they report that as of May, there are 298,000, about 300,000 electric vehicles on the road in the UK, and about another 8,000 or so electric vans. But the most important thing is that there are now over, they report, 150 models. And this is important because you're not just buying an EV one type, there's one in each category which people find popular, right through from MPVs to family cars, and obviously sports and the luxury end of the market. And that's really how an indication of how popular electric vehicle take-up could be. But it's expensive and prices are still high. To attract buyers, the main thing that manufacturers have been doing is emphasizing increased mileage, the range of the car on one full charge. But a number of people pointed out to me, most recently a guy delivering at the door, to say that that data is calculated under ideal driving conditions. And it doesn't really take into account, for example, hills, or importantly, the amount of energy taken to heat a car or cool it, depending upon what time of year it is. And that really does hit the battery life. The prices are high and there are very few secondhand EVs around. So there's no real lower price entry point for new buyers. And understandably, when the battery in the car is finally exhausted, it's said that the value of the car plummets to virtually nothing. So we'd like some examples of what you can buy and how much they cost.
Yeah, very keen. And just on the mileage point, Mike, obviously there's a lot of technology and investment going into this. What is the pace of extending that mileage? Is it a gradual climb or do leap-throughs suddenly occur in battery technology?
Good question. They move hand in hand. So Nissan Leafs, the latest is called the E Plus Techna. That has now a range of about 240 miles, it's said. And these started out at about 150 miles range. By the way, that would cost you £36,000. The link is that the battery life, the battery capacity, which is expressed in kilowatt hours, is being increased, and of course that raises the range. So some other examples, I'll come on to battery life in a minute. Tesla M3, that gives you 250 miles for £40,000. Model S from Tesla takes you up to about 380 miles, they say, but that costs you about £82,000. And the new Audi e-tron, which is a marvelous looking car, the 55 model, will set you back about £72,000. So let's move on to really the point of this discussion, which is, and you've raised it, the relationship between the battery size, the range as an ancillary of the cost, and to my mind, the most important factor, which is how you charge these things up. So a Jaguar I-Pace, that will start at £64,000. It will give you a range of about 300 miles. Domestic charge time. So if you were plugging this in at home, how long do you think it would take to charge that car fully?
I think it's 6-7 hours.
Well, at 220 volts, it will take you 38 hours. And that's on the website. Of course, that's not how all these cars would be charged. And we move on there to the kilowatt hour, if you like, conundrum. So this is really the core of what I call the problem for EVs. A high-end Tesla is rated about 120 kilowatt hours. So that's what gets you the power and the range and the rest of it. A UK household, boiling kettle, I don't know, dishwasher, whatever you're using electricity for, will draw about 9 kilowatt hours each day. And that's what the grid at the local level is set up to deliver. Not much more than that. Mm-hmm. So to charge your Tesla, using essentially all the power at your disposal, would take you on grid about 12 or 13 hours. So if you've come back from a long journey and you've got not much left, if you like, in your battery tank, you've got to find a way of quickly topping that up if you want to or have to go out. So public place chargers, the things you plug the car into if you were out and about or would have been out and about, these are rated in groups. They start at 7 kilowatt hours and they go up to 50 kilowatt hours. So that's where you could actually charge a reasonable amount of your vehicle in a couple of hours. How long does it take on average for somebody to go to a petrol station, fill the tank, pay and leave? What do you think?
Well, obviously the queues have got a lot shorter in recent weeks. I would hope to get topped up, paid in 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah, you're right. 7 minutes. That's what BP told me at a conference. Right. 7 minutes.
So the first question I've got close on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this is a behavioural change, a big difference in the 30 minutes to a couple of hours for an electric vehicle. Let's just briefly talk about how much power there is in the grid. Western Power has said in a survey they've conducted that about a third of the cables in the UK, it's a couple of hundred thousand, 300,000, will require what they call intervention when we get to a penetration rate of about 40% on EVs. And, you know, looking back at what the IEA was saying, they're looking at some punchy numbers, and we really need to see some inroads into that 39 million vehicle tally in the UK before we see the real anti-pollution benefits. So we need to upgrade the power supply. Charge points. This is where it gets interesting. There are about 32,000 public charge points across the UK. And a startup provider called Podpoint famously said that they would need about 800,000 charge points by now. Mm-hmm. And by 2027, 10 million. 10 million charge points. I won't go into the cost of that, but if you want to go back over it, it's quite a big figure. So now we move to the kind of conclusion of my thoughts on electric vehicles. To get prices down, to get a large-scale EV market going, we need to have accessibility to fast charging. The alternative is to change our habits. So you go to an out-of-town charge park, maybe at the end of a long day, you've driven a long way, you've run down the battery, you have to wait there a couple of hours to get a reasonable charge. And maybe that would be much fun in winter. Mm-hmm. Some pilot schemes have always already found that charge points in public places get vandalised. Not a surprise, perhaps. At one event I attended, Nottingham Council reported that they found one outlet wasn't being used. So when they sent somebody along there, they found it had been super glued. So it was stuck. Households with on-street parking may not have access to the domestic charge point next to their home that they need every day. Somebody may park there. Some providers have been installing or were installing charge points outside supermarkets for free. So you could charge the car for free, and that would encourage you to spend more time in the supermarket. Obviously, under current circumstances, that's completely off the cards. But that was one, if you like, approach to the problem. Mm-hmm. You could plan your journey. Jeremy Clarkson wrote an interesting article about his range anxiety leaving London going to Norfolk on this very subject. And there is an app provider called Zap Map, and you can use that app to chart your course to the next available charge point by location, by type, by capacity, and by looking at the blog to see whether it actually is working as it should be. But you have to look at the way you're traveling in a different way. So my thoughts on all this is that there's clearly an emphasis on expanding the range of electric vehicles and extending the range travel on one battery charge. But what's lacking is the provision of adequate charge infrastructure, and there's no coordinated plan. That it's quite a sporadic, evolving picture. You mentioned right at the beginning, Andy, that with the evolving COVID-19 situation and a glut of oil and clear skies in the absence of automobile pollution, it may be that the petrol engine has a longer life by virtue of being cheaper and to run, and also discouraged from being used as we had before. In addition to which, we may, as we're doing now, change the way we work, spend less time travelling and work more remotely. I won't go into the last part of this, which is the full environmental impact of creating batteries and all the metals and so forth that go into that. It's a different subject. But what I hoped to share today were my thoughts that were really approaching a sensible solution to the pollution caused by petrol engine is raising other issues when it comes to deployment of electric vehicles, one of which I do not own. Yeah. Over to you.
Yeah, well, that's a really interesting summary, right? And as you say, it's it touches so many other industries. It's the whole infrastructure, and from an investor's point of view, you can see the direction of travel. Understand publicly quoted automobile companies, are they going down the right route here? But then it leads into battery technology, R&D there, companies that are investing on that. Components, lithium mining, smart meters, as you say, charging at home. A lot of modern house builds come with that automatically fitted, but it is technology that needs to be provided, or the public charging like Podpoint. So it's going to touch an awful lot of sectors and companies. And as you say, hopefully it will help keep the air, the cleaner standard that we have got used to in the last 2 months. So many thanks for your time, and we wish all of our listeners a very good weekend.